TalkZone.com.
A streak of fire, a breath of flame, eluding all who reach and clutch. A gray ghost thrown into the game that rival hands may never touch. A rubber-bounding, blasting soul whose destination is the goal, Red Grange of Illinois by Grantland Rice. For many of us, names like Butkus, Nitschke, and Grange are more than mere players on a field. They represent the history, the glory, and the spirit of a university that has contributed so much to this country and has made our lives rich beyond anything we may offer in return. If Virginia belongs to Jefferson, then surely the land-grant legislation proposed and signed by Abraham Lincoln in 1865 gave birth to his home state university in 1867 and countless other institutions for the people, of the people, and by the people. We are the living legacy of Father Abraham's great institution. Sons and daughters of Illinois, our renaissance, in the words of Ron Gunther, is now. From Chicago, the greatest sports city in America, we are proud to bring you Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G.
Hello, Illini Nation. Boz and Mr. G, Talking Illini on TalkZone.com. Give us a call today if you want to talk to Brian Barnhart in about 30 minutes or Trent Meacham in about 60 minutes, 888-463-6748. Or you can email us at talkingillini@yahoo.com. Is this the crow?
This is my lunch, Boss. I don't know what you're talking about.
Mr. G just opened a little thing. I don't know. It looks like chicken.
You know, I'm just having a little lunch here. I thought it's our time, so I could, you know, have a little lunch if I wanted to.
Looks a little dry.
It looks a little dry.
The season has ended.
But in any event, let's get back to the crow thing because, you know, I was supposed to eat crow.
You know,
Illini went 6-3 in the second half of the year. In fact, they went 5-4. I was saved by Taylor Battles, last second shot. So I brought in my lunch, which, you know,
is close to crow. I don't know. I've never seen crow.
Looks it tastes like crow. It tastes like crow.
Does it? Well, yeah, I think you should eat it anyway because you, I believe, picked 9-9 at the beginning of the year, and we're much better than that. Who would have thought a year ago that we'd be the second seed in the conference tourney coming up, finishing at 11-7, tied with Purdue, getting the second seed over Purdue because we beat them twice. And it's been a terrific regular season. Now hopefully we can get a few wins this week, get the winning feeling back, because ironically we're the first time all season we've lost two games in a row now, albeit tough, close games. Out of the eight games we've lost all season, six of them went down to the last few minutes or so. There were only two that we were out of beyond 5, 8, 10 minutes of the second half, at Minnesota, at Wisconsin. But the other six losses were relatively close games. So it's been one heck of a season for Bruce Weber and his squad. And hopefully we could keep it going this weekend and the following weekend and see if we could get to the Sweet 16 weekend at least. What do you think, Mr. G?
Oh, I don't see us going to the Sweet 16, but you know that's my nature. I'm I can't help myself. I mean, here's what I think: in life, you underpromise and overdeliver, and by limiting or reducing my expectations, I limit the disappointment with an early loss. And if they win more than I expect them to, well, it's all gravy.
I'm not sure I understand what that means, but, you know, I'll just say that I read something this morning, a quote from your friend and all of Illini Nation. I'm not sure that he originated it, the quote, but he recently said it, and that is that offense sells tickets and defense wins games. And we finished the conference season with the best scoring defense, giving up only 57 points a game. Wisconsin and Michigan State were behind us. And as ugly as our offense might look at times, especially when the shot clock's running out and especially towards the end of the games, the defense is what's kept us in there all year, which has won us games and kept us close in six out of those eight losses.
See, I think it can be deceiving, though. When you just look at it on a strictly on a points-per-game basis, what you're not looking at is you're not looking at offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. You're not looking at possessions per game, shots per game, those kind of things. If we take the shot clock down to 30 seconds on virtually every possession, and we play, you know, and we play reasonable defense, there are going to be fewer shots in a game just by virtue of our offensive production. So what I want to see, and I think that, you know, this goes back to sometimes there are statistics, lies, and damn lies. And sometimes you just need to read beyond the statistics. It's the same thing with free throw percentage. What I read this year is everybody marvels at about our free throw percentage. Well, look at the gross number of free throws that we've taken and made on the season. And as a percentage basis, it's less important. Well, that's a more important statistic than free throw percentage.
All right, well, here's my retort, rebuttal to that. Field goal percentage defense, okay, has nothing to do with the shot clock and wasted time on offense and all that. We have held the opponent to 39.4% shooting, Minnesota second with almost 41%, Purdue third with 42%. So that's got to speak for something, regardless of possessions and all that.
It's a factor, and it's an important factor. Now tell me the statistic on defensive and offensive rebounding, because that's part of defense. And if you don't clear the rebound and you don't create a possession change, now people are getting second shots on you. And you know what? If you have two shots on a possession and you only shoot 40%, you still have an 80% chance of scoring.
Right. Our Achilles has been rebounding, although offensive rebounding.
No, I'm talking about defensive rebounding.
I know.
Because that's a defensive statistic.
Defense, we're at the bottom.
We're at the bottom.
We're 10 out of 11.
10 out of 11.
But still.
It's an important statistic as it relates to defense, because what it means is even though teams are shooting a lower percentage against us, they have more opportunities. And in having those additional opportunities, it increases their likelihood that they're going to score on that possession. And then
if they've had more possessions, they're still only shooting 39%.
But doesn't matter. If you look at it's the same thing with free throw shooting. If you look at free throw percentage, it's more a function of the number of free throws attempted and made as opposed to percentage.
All right. So are you telling me then that this 11-7 and what's the final record? 23-18 team should be even better then?
No. What I'm saying is that I think we've overachieved. We've had a great year, but too much is made out of points per game, and it's not in and of itself the definitive or defining statistic as it relates to defensive efficiency. There are other factors involved.
Yeah, but when you throw them all in the pot, including rebound, we still come out as a pretty darn good defensive squad and a pretty good team.
Now answer the following question. How many free throws have we attempted this year? I think it's under 400.
Well, we're now shifting to a totally different.
No. But I want you. I'm talking about offensive and defensive efficiency. We've attempted under 400 free throws. How many free throws have our opponents attempted?
You'll have to give me a minute to look.
I can play Jeopardy music. By the way, I want to give a shout out to somebody who I feel very closely about. He's listening. In the north of Israel right now, Sammy the Lion. Sammy, shout out to you. And Sam's actually living in Israel for a while. And one of his best friends is the coach of a team that won the Israel Cup. It's actually called the President's Cup in Israel. They beat Maccabi Tel Aviv. Dee Brown, who's not playing, by the way, is not even... wasn't even in the final, but but his team that he was rooting for was in the finals. Israeli basketball, very competitive. The games there are like European soccer games, with all the fans clad in their colors, singing, shouting, the entire and standing the entire game. It's really a sight to be seen. Boz, have you come up with this for us?
Yeah, in the conference, opponents have shot 259 free throws, and we've shot 201.
That's actually better than I thought.
Yeah, and we're shooting almost 70% while opponents are shooting 66%.
Okay, so how many have they made and how many have we made?
They've made 171 and we made 139.
171, 139. Okay, so that's 32 free throws. 32 free throws, so it's roughly two more points per game that we're giving up from the free throw line.
Right. That shouldn't necessarily kill us. I mean, it killed
us. Except in a two-point game.
Well, it killed us the last game or two. But there's a couple reasons for that. Obviously, the type of players you have, but also the type of... You are unbelievable. He's eating the thing now.
The crow. I'm eating the crow.
Yeah, with your hands. Not even with the knife and fork. Just sticking your hand in there and shoving it. You want to put the napkin like... Stuff it in your shirt.
I don't have to worry
like
about
Archie
that.
Archie Bunker.
I'm okay.
Yes, that's a big problem that is probably not going to be solved this year. The lack of getting to the line. Hopefully, it will in future years when we get a few more athletes able to put the ball on the floor and slash to the basket. But also the nature of our offense. Quick ball movement and the motion, and we're getting good shots. We're like right up there in the conference also in percentage of shots made, and that's because Davis and Tisdale have some pretty darn good...
What have we shot from a field goal percentage for the year?
For the year, you want conference or you want...
Conference, total? Conference.
All right, conference field goal percentage 44. 32 from three, which isn't that great. Although, you make 3 out of 10 on threes, that's 9 points, and that equals like 45% on two. So, the numbers kind of relate and correlate and equate and, make sense there.
I said to Lauren Tate about 3-4 weeks ago, I said, listen, the two weaknesses on this team... We don't have an animal kind of very physical presence inside that can just bang and jump and attack the glass, both from an offensive and a rebounding standpoint. And the other thing that we don't have is somebody who can take you off the dribble at the end of a shot clock or at the end of a game. And clearly, the last few weeks of the season, we've seen that time and time again, that this is the Achilles heel of this particular basketball team. We don't have that banger who can just, play around the glass, a Michigan State type of guy. Hopefully Stan Simpson will be that guy next year. And we don't have a consistent ball handler who can take you off the dribble, who can create at the end of a shot clock, at the end of a game. McCamey is not that player. He does not have the lateral speed to do that. And time again, it's what hurts us at the end of possessions, late in games.
Speaking of end of the game, do we want to go back and talk about the Penn State game, or is that going to aggravate your... Your crow-eating lunch. Here?
Listen, it made my lunch taste a lot better.
Turn your head to the right or left and cough. Don't shoot it right at me. The one thing at the end of the game, there were several things at the end of the game, but one of the major things I wrote down is when Davis was shooting the free throw, we had nobody in the lane to try to get a rebound. I understand a lot of teams do that because they're afraid someone's going to get a ticky-tack foul. But also, it seemed like, and I didn't have a chance, and when I thought about it, really didn't want to go back and look at the replay and get myself sick over it, but... It seemed like too many guys, maybe two or three, were kind of just, hanging around mid-court instead of back, on defense, top of the lane, free throw line extended, whatever, so that when...
Did you go back and watch the play?
Battle got the ball.
Did you watch it on replay?
No.
Okay, I did several times, actually.
Yeah, and he went by everybody. two or three of which guys were very far away from the basket, right?
Okay, so you're going to go on one-time memory, and I'm going to tell you what I saw from looking at the play more times than I should have.
Okay.
There are two things that I want to point out to you. One, on the inbounds pass, obviously Davis should have never handled the ball on the inbounds
right,
pass.
Right.
And that was Weber's biggest failure in the game.
He admitted that.
But if you go back and watch the inbounds play, there were five guys from Penn State on our side of the court. Meacham breaks completely free at the beginning of the inbounds pass. He was the first option. Chester Frazier never looked at Meacham. Meacham would have had a layup going the other way.
How do you know he was the first option?
Because I had heard subsequent to the fact that Meacham, because he's the best free throw shooter on the team, was the first option on the play. He broke wide open. There were five guys on the Illinois side of the court. You see Meacham streaking down the sideline. Frazier never picked up his head.
Well, if he was first option, you would have thought that he would have looked at him.
You would think. But I've always said that Chester Frazier doesn't see the court that well. He really gets a lot of his assists based on the fact that guys are wide open and he doesn't want to shoot the ball. And that's why he gets a lot of his assists. And then on the last play, what you see, and this just compounded, you know, my frustration on the play as it related to Davis. Davis actually picks Chester Frazier on the play. He sets a pick for him. And so as Frazier is chasing Taylor Battle down the left side of the court, Davis comes out, shows, and ends up picking Frazier and letting Taylor Battle go around Davis.
And how far, where was that on the court?
It was about 12 feet away from the basket and about 5 feet off of the baseline.
Okay.
And he actually, go back and watch it. It's on YouTube. Go back and watch it. Davis sets a wonderful pick. And then you have McKamey, you know, who was guarding Pringle at the time. And Pringle, you know, had made a lot of baskets. He did not leave Pringle. He kind of waved at Battle going by him. And Brock, who was underneath the basket, was a little too deep and really didn't get out enough from underneath the basket and couldn't make a play on the ball. As it was, Taylor Battle had to hoist the ball over Brock, high up onto the glass, and Brock narrowly missed blocking the shot.
Right. I mean, it wasn't a clean shot, a clean layup. There was a degree of luck. The ball stayed up there, rolled around a little, and finally dropped through.
The only reason it upsets me that we lost the game,
well, we were
as it turns
well
out,
up until...
As it turned out, I thought it was one of our better games of the year, actually. Up until the last 3 minutes of the game, we had played one of our better games of the year. You'll remember, though, that Pringle actually banked in a three-pointer there, too, which helped us when Penn State played Iowa. Jake Kelly banked in two threes
yes.
in overtime. But Pringle banked in a three during the game as well, late in the game, to cut our lead from 9-6, I believe. Or maybe it was 6-3. But in any event, what it did, it didn't affect our seeding, as it turned out. So that was, you know, not an issue for us as it relates to the Big Ten tournament. I hope it didn't affect our psyche and confidence. And
well,
this
right.
is
we'll
this
see.
Is a thing that I've always said to you. I worry that this team is a fragile team.
Well, we'll find out. We'll ask Brian Barnhart what he thinks. We'll ask Trent Meacham what he thinks. And you, the fans, can ask us or ask them whatever you want at 888-463-6748 or shoot us an email at talkingillini@yahoo.com. So what did you think? I mean, did you mind that nobody was in the lane to try to get a rebound?
No, that doesn't bother me. You know what? It's a personal preference. What I do mind, though, is because we don't have a guy who can really create his own shot, I do mind us milking the clock. I'd like to see some sort of statistical analysis where it shows you what your you know, percentage of winning is when you stall versus just running your offense. Yesterday, watching North Carolina Duke, and obviously the level of athlete in that game is much different, but North Carolina, when they were sitting at a 7-point lead, a 9-point lead, if they had an open shot, they went hard to the hole.
Right.
If they had an open shot, they took it. Guys
well,
weren't passing up shots.
That's what you got to do.
Well, I'm not sure.
No matter what level of athlete you have.
I'm not sure.
Because... like in football, you hear of the prevent defense, which usually prevents the team from winning. We went into our prevent offense, which prevented us from winning. We don't need to intentionally, you know, air the ball out and wind the clock down. Because as you said all year, we don't have anybody who can get his own shot as the time is winding down. If we would just run our offense like we have the whole game, the clock will take care of itself, and we'll get a decent percentage shot like we have all year. Instead of ending up with, you know, a hurried shot from someone.
And you don't think it has anything to do with teams playing tighter defense in the last 5 minutes of games, overplaying the ball, and the fact that we don't back cut very well? You don't think the teams overplay us and play harder defensively that make us getting those perimeter shots in our offense, which we get with much more ease earlier on in the game, with much more difficulty late in the game?
I'm not looking for a perimeter shot, especially when we're winning by 8 or 10 points. Run the offense, work the ball, get it down to Tisdale and Davis.
We're going to take a break for a moment for these words from our sponsors. Again, you can reach us at 888-463-6748 or email us at talkingalini@yahoo.com.
Hey, Illini fans. Looking to win in the game of real estate? There's never been a better time to buy a new home. Interest rates are low, there are plenty of homes to choose from, and ultimately real estate is a great investment. Greg Fisher of Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage is experienced, professional, and dedicated. As your realtor, Greg can help you find the perfect new home. Contact Greg today at 847-681-4173 or learn more at gregshouses.com. Buy or sell with the man who knows his X's and O's. Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage is owned and operated by NRT LLC.
Chicago Athletic Club is the number one athletic club chain in Chicagoland, according to the Chicago Tribune. For membership info, visit their Lincoln Park, Lakeview, Evanston, or West Loop locations, or call Pat Cunningham at 773-529-2024. Tell him Boz and Mr. G sent you, and receive 1 month absolutely free. That's 773-529-2024. Chicago Athletic Clubs, another great Illini sports experience.
You buy the car you want at RizzoCars.com. RizzoCars.com.
It's true. You'll find the car you want at RizzaCars.com. Over 6,000 new and used cars, trucks, and vans available online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's so fast and so easy. RizzaCars.com is your one-stop auto purchase resource site. Build a new vehicle. Compare up to 5 vehicles at once. Access new vehicle reviews. Take a new car video test drive. RizzaCars.com also offers easy-to-qualify online financing, which helps to make your purchase simple and fast. Shop 13 new car franchises, including Ford, Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, Lincoln, Mercury, Acura, Porsche, Kia, Hummer, and Saab. So if you're tired and frustrated of driving from dealer to dealer, just remember,
you'll find the car you want at RizzoCars.com. RizzoCars.com.
The website that gives you some real excitement without charging you by the minute.
It really is a lot of fun.
TalkZone.com. And now, let's get back in the game for more Talking Illini on TalkZone.com. Here are your hosts, Boz and Mr. G.
We're back, Talking Illini, Boz and Mr. G on TalkZone.com. Give us a call, 888-463-6748, or email us at TalkingIllini@yahoo.com. I believe we have a few more Wildfire gift certificates left to give out to lucky callers or lucky emailers. Mr. G, tonight, I believe, on Big Ten Network, they're announcing the all-Big Ten team, offense, defense, probably, coach of the year. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm going to read you Herb Gould's first team. Taylor Battle, Manny Harris, Juwan Johnson, Kalen Lucas, Evan Turner. On the second team, he's got Cornley, Davis, Hummel, Moore, and Sutton. And his third team is Coble, Dumas from Indiana, Landry, Morgan, and Westbrook.
I agree with a lot of that. You know, I think Coble should be at least second team.
I agree with that.
I think we might be surprised, and in my opinion, it'd be a pleasant surprise as a fan. I think that, I mean, Manny Harris has been terrific. You know, if you just go by points scored and the leaders and all that, you know, I mean, Coble and Manny Harris, that to me, that's a toss-up for the fifth spot on that team. The other ones I don't disagree with at all. What do you have? Battle and Lucas and Juwan Johnson has, is it Juwan or Javon? He's just had an awesome season.
What about the kid from Minnesota, the other kid, not Westbrook, but Johnson? He was a great defensive player, I thought.
I'm not sure. What, Johnson? I don't know. I don't know exactly who you're talking about. I pleaded.
Number 34. He's kind of a long kid. He had like five blocks against us.
For defense or just for the
Well, he was such a good defensive player. And you put somebody like Frazier on the third team.
Well, you know, that could be also. How about, I mean, if you're going by position, like two forwards, two guards, and a center. I mean, I thought Tisdale might sneak into third team. Who are the centers on the second and third?
Well, I think they're just going the best 15 players.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, if you go, I'm looking at...
I'm not sure Hummel deserved to be on the second team.
No.
What has Hummel done this year?
No, thank you for the crow there. right, Hummel's been hurt a lot. He hasn't had a big season. That's on reputation alone. But looking at the conference statistical leaders, and I printed this morning, although I don't think they updated with yesterday's game, but Coble is actually ahead, albeit not by much, of Manny Harris, and that's why I think, you know, he could sneak into a first team and for sure should be a second team all-conference. And do you just consider stats, or do you consider, you know, where would a guy's team be without him?
Well, and that was Herb's point about Chester Frazier. He said Illinois goes from a 7-11 team to an 11-7 team because of Chester Frazier's year.
You know, you could say that about a lot of guys. I mean, where would Penn State be without Battle's year?
Well, Battle's going to be the player of the year or first team All-Big Ten at the very least. So he's getting the recognition.
And another interesting thing I wanted to ask you about, Evan Turner certainly has had a terrific year. He had a terrific game yesterday against Northwestern. Came up with a huge shot with 25 seconds to go or so. Diebler was wide open in the corner, and I don't know if Turner saw him or not, but Turner just kind of put the ball down hard, elevated over his guy, and hit about a 15, 16-footer that basically put the game away. But did Turner benefit from Lighty's injury and getting more playing time and getting the ball more? Would Ohio State have been, you know, some might say that, you know, it hurt them that Lighty was out, and if he wasn't out, would they have been better? Would Turner have been better? What do you think?
What do I think? I don't know. I think it matters what I think. I think that, you know, I don't watch enough Ohio State basketball to really render a relevant opinion on the subject. I think that Turner had a great year, and whether Lighty's presence would have impacted that or not, I think is pure speculation. And if we want the answer to that question, we should call the Ohio State play-by-play guy.
All right. Well, maybe we will later. But I was looking over the names and the numbers, and for the most part, I agree with Herb on there.
And what about the defensive player there? He says that he thinks Kramer is going to get it, but he would lobby for Chester Frazier.
Well, you know, Kramer's the defending winner of that award. Frazier certainly has had a terrific year. Walton of Michigan State, you know, they probably think that, you know, he, you know, of him the same way we think of Frazier.
Well, and the kid Johnson from Minnesota, too, is a tremendous defensive player.
Right. So, and Krabenhoff, I think, is that the right way to say his name?
He should have been 13, but all Big Ten.
Yeah, he's a solid player, and I think he's there in the team picture for defense, too, if not one of the all-conference teams.
Yeah, no, my buddy Larry Lubin said that he thinks that the Big Ten is as bad as it's been in his recent memory. And I disagree with him. I really do. I think if you look at the sophomore class in the Big Ten, and if you look at the Herb Gould's first team, all five players are sophomores.
Right.
The second team, he's got two out of the five are sophomores, and I would argue that he should have had more on the second team. And the third team, you only have one senior on the third team. This is a relatively young conference. The sophomore class is an extraordinary class, and a lot of it depends on who's going to end up staying and who's going to end up going to the pros after this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, maybe the upperclassmen aren't that great, and that's why you're seeing a lot of underclassmen playing a lot and thriving. But we've said all year long, at least I have, that the youth in this conference is solid and exciting to watch and to look at them. You know, if most of them come back for a junior year, as well as the recruits coming in, this conference is on the rise.
Baz, I'd love to hear more from you. But right now, we've got the golden tone voice of the Fighting Illini on. Welcome back, Brian Barnhart.
Hey, let me turn my internet down. Hold on.
All right.
Okay, Brian.
I'm just kidding. I always wanted to say that.
Yeah, get that computer off your lap while you're driving, too.
How you guys doing?
Great. How about you, Brian?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. I always love the Big Ten tournament. I love tournaments of any kind, but I know it. You know, for Illinois, it's probably always better to be in Chicago. I think when the vote came down, I was talking to Bruce this morning. The vote to keep the tournament in Chicago was 10-1 against. And Bruce was the only one that voted for Chicago to keep it there.
I had heard that it was 8-3 actually.
Was it 8-3?
Yeah, Northwestern voted to keep it in Chicago. Illinois voted to keep it in Chicago. And Tom Izzo voted to keep it in Chicago.
Is that right? Yeah. Well, I mean, Bruce might have been exaggerating, but it was you know, it's great over in Indy. They do a great job with it. You know, they rename the streets after all the teams. They even dress up the trash cans.
It's a much bigger deal in Indy than it is in Chicago. And the other thing that you have to consider is that Indy stepped up and offered more money than the United Center did. And I saw the financial packages that were proffered by both Indianapolis and Chicago. And Chicago's financial package was not as substantial. There was not assistance from the city of Chicago that was offered. And really, at the end of the day, they may not have been wrong. Given this economy, it may come back to Chicago because Indy may have made a mistake and overreached on the bidding.
Yeah, we'll find out. But it is a great setting, and it's just you know, fun to be a part of it. And like I said, it's probably better for Illinois. They're so comfortable playing up there. But, hey, you know, I guess geographically, Indianapolis is probably a little bit closer.
Yeah, and part of the discussion there was the convenience for fans, too. I mean, you could get a hotel room and park for the weekend and just be walking around to the arena and to the restaurants, whereas it's a little different setup from downtown Chicago to the United Center.
Yeah, and you see fans, you know, walking around the different team colors, and as the tournament goes on, you see less and less of the other teams and more of the teams that are headed for the semifinals or the finals. So it's a great setting. We're going over there, our broadcast team, over on Thursday and watch some basketball and eat some free food and, you know, just have a nice front row seat for the first day. It's nice to not have to be playing on that Thursday after a couple of years of doing that and get ready to play Friday.
I would argue, though, Brian, that from a national recruiting perspective, that having the tournament in Chicago, albeit it may not be as convenient for some of the fans attending, is more important from a national perspective, given Chicago's relative importance versus Indianapolis in the national scheme of things.
Yeah, maybe. But I don't know. That's why I guess they alternated for a few years. And, you know, I kind of like the going back and forth. But, hey, Indy's paid the money, and like you say, it's a great setup.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think it's all going to come down to money. And whoever offers a better financial package the next time the contract's up for bid is probably going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Brian,
imagine
before we get...
It comes down to money.
Yeah, never does that, does it?
Before we roll up our sleeves and get into the tournament and the pairings, let's kind of look back at the season. And first want to ask you, you know, ironically, we end the season losing two in a row, the first time we've done that all year. Is this going to affect the psyche of this team?
Well, I guess it could, but there may be enough of a gap in between the games to you know, and they're probably feeling better about being number two, I would think, the number two seed and all that happened over the weekend. Bruce actually gave him a couple of days off over the weekend and didn't practice again until Sunday yesterday. And kind of a funny story, guys, we had a power out. I had some strong winds blow through here yesterday and knocked out power to almost the entire University of Illinois campus. And so they started at Ubbin, and they couldn't practice because it was dark. It was late in the afternoon, so they went over to our new ARC, they call it, the intramural and recreation area. And they've got some beautiful new courts there, and the sunlight, what sunlight there was still coming in, even though they had no power. So they practiced under natural light up till it got dark, and then did some other stuff without electricity for a while last night. So that's kind of an interesting twist on the practice. But their psyche, I think, will be – they've been very resilient. At times, you know, there have been games we lost, and I think people have kind of panicked, thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, here we've been exposed, and sure, this team has some weaknesses that you guys, I think, have talked about already today. But then they bounce right back in the next game, and they play extremely well. I'm thinking at Ohio State, they come back and play well. You know, I think they're going to bounce back fine, and I think they've got a pretty good draw, actually, considering all the parity in the league. You know, Michigan State at the very top, Indiana at the very bottom of it. I mean, you could shake up the whole league from top to bottom. And just to tell you and to give you an example of how what I'm talking about, I mean, think about it. Northwestern is the 9 seed, and they won at Michigan State, at Purdue, and nearly beat Illinois. So your top three teams, they did beat twice, and they almost beat again and had Purdue down at Northwestern and let them off the hook. So that tells you a lot about the league right there.
I actually thought we played one of our better games of the year for about 37 minutes at Penn State. I thought we were very efficient offensively. We played great D, and then just didn't get it done the last 3 minutes of the game.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's one of the few games, and you guys can check me on this, but it's one of the few games. You think about it during the course of the year, they have games where they've played really well and won. There's games where they played really poorly and lost. There's games where they probably didn't play great, like at Northwestern, and still won. That was one of the few times where they played really, really well and lost.
Probably the Michigan State game was the only – at Michigan State, maybe, was the only other time that I thought they played a really solid game.
And it hasn't happened very often. That's what really hurt was the kick in the gut, was the, you know, playing so well, as you said, and then at the very end, just letting it, you know, kind of slip away. And that was, it was such an interesting night because Penn State never draws anybody. Doing games there, for one thing, we're back in a different location. I don't know if you know this, but the press area and where we broadcast from is way up in the suites, away from the court. And that's the one place when there's usually nobody there and you're far away from the action where you don't feel like you're part of what's going on. That was the first game I've done there where there was some real serious noise. They were giving away tickets, bring a student friend for free, $1 hot dog night, and they packed the place out. And it, you know, they called it in the papers out there the most important game in the building's history.
Yeah, no, and it was exciting. Did you see the last inbounds play when we inbounded the ball, when Chester Frazier did, how open Meacham was breaking into the front court?
You know, I saw it later. I didn't see it right away just because I was watching the clock and where the ball was going. I didn't necessarily glance to my left, you know, where he could have had a layup. I'm told that was true, and I know you guys have talked about it, so it must be true. But I didn't see that initially. And we've had a little trouble getting the ball inbounds at times this year. I was just relieved it got in.
Yeah.
I know Coach admitted later on the postgame that it shouldn't have gone in the hands of Davis, and I can understand that, but think about it. He's been a 70%, 71% foul shooter all year. I didn't really think much about it. That that's the wrong guy to throw it to.
Yeah, I actually said something to a buddy of mine. We were watching the game in a group. I said this is the wrong guy to be shooting free throws at this point in the game. He looked shaky down the stretch shooting free throws, especially in the second half of the Big Ten season.
Yeah. Well, my initial reaction in the heat of battle was, oh, I can live with that option. I mean, that's probably not the best option, but I could live with it. Just be, you know, better than, you know, if, you know, somebody else, Calvin Brock or somebody like that, even Chester, you know, hasn't shot great. He's below 70%. So I guess I wasn't as upset about that as some people became later, because I'd seen him make a lot of free throws this year. But obviously in that situation, he wasn't the best option.
No, he's probably about the third. We'd want Trent or McCamey up there, I would think. But, Brian, the fans' perception is it seems like a lot of these times we have a lead late in the game and we try to take the air out of the ball and we're not running the offense. And is that how you see it?
Well, not necessarily. I think there's a fine line there. You know, you get down to 3 or 4 minutes to go. Obviously, if you're up 8 or 10, you want to try to keep scoring. But if you start taking quick shots, people are going, well, what are you doing? And, you know, obviously teams are going to try to force you to take a shot you don't want to take. And in the flow of our offense, if we're not in the right spot, obviously you're going to get a bad look. Or you're going to, and it's going to look like you're stalling, you know, trying to kill the clock. I never got the feeling that we were just trying to hold on. You know, I think there's kind of a balance there, trying to run as much clock as you can. You know, obviously we don't shoot enough free throws and we have not done a great job of, you know, forcing the action. Look at Taylor Battle the other day against Iowa. He just kept going in there repeatedly.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily have that kind of player to do that. So that's probably, you know, part of our weaknesses get exposed there a little bit. But I never had the sense we were just trying to, you know, by golly, we just got to try to burn all the clock we can. I think there was a balance in there, but sometimes teams take stuff away from you, you know, when they're trying to get the ball back too.
Right. No, that's a good point, and Scott pointed that out earlier when I brought the question up. But it just seems to me that, like, if we run our offense the way we do most of the game, you know, usually we're efficient enough where enough time goes off the clock and we get a better percentage shot than if someone's got to, you know, try to take someone off the dribble as the shot clock's winding down.
Yeah, ideally, and it kind of depends, I guess, on where the ball is at what time on the clock. You know, are we 25 feet from the basket? Or are we, you know, does Davis have a baseline jumper at, you know, 15? Does he shoot it if he's open? Or do you try to work it back around? I mean, that's where that balance comes in, I guess. You're trying to, you know, thread the needle there as far as burning enough clock without putting yourself in an awkward position and then need to just drive in more and create more, and we don't quite have that ability, I don't think, on a consistent basis.
Well, and that's the two holes, and I've talked about this repeatedly. We don't have a banger inside who can really do the kind of things that some of Michigan State's big guys can do in terms of rebounding and scoring inside, and we don't have a penetrator who can create for himself at the end of a shot clock or the end of a game. It's the two weaknesses on this team that will ultimately limit us in the Big Ten tournament and in the NCAA tournament.
Well, that's probably true, but I mean, that's true of a lot of teams. I think, you know, there's only one team that's going to win at all. Teams' weaknesses get exposed as you go on. I do say this about Illinois in the tournament, not so much the Big Ten tournament, but in the national tournament, they'd be very, very hard to scout. I mean, if you don't see this team on a regular basis, it's probably hard to simulate what they do in practice, all the cutting and, you know, the screening and the moving and all of that. I'm assuming that in at least the first game or two, they would get some pretty good looks. Now, obviously, when you get to the Sweet 16, if you were to get that far, it becomes a different story, and you got, you know, teams with probably more talent overall and that kind of thing. But, you know, every team has weaknesses. Gary Nottingham always tells me, he's on Bruce's staff, and Wayne has always told me this, Wayne McLean, and Bruce has said this too. I mean, by this point of the season, you are what you are. I mean, you know, we're not, you know, we don't get enough free throws. Obviously our rebounding is not what it should be. But hey, we offset that with some other things. We shoot the ball well. We've got big guys that can step out and shoot it. You know, McCamey can do a lot of things. Chester brings a lot to the table. And I just think sometimes we can look too closely at our own team and we see all the faults and all the, you know, we can pick away at different things, but you know, when you look at it, there's a lot of teams that are what Illinois is that are going to be in the tournament. 23-8. Is a really good record.
Hey, we do the same things with our wives. We see them every day, and we notice stuff on them that no one else notices.
Yeah, and that's okay. That's part of being a fan, and we're, you know. But I think when you look across the, you know, the national scene and look at it realistically going in, I mean, the one thing that's been so fun about this year, guys, is the fact that I've been all around teams that have carried very heavy expectations, and you almost spread. Oh my gosh, you know, we lost a game, And you know, what are we going to do, and how far can we go in the tournament? This year's team had no expectations at all, and that's what's been so fun about it, is to watch them grow. And I said early on, just I could tell early, that this team is going to grow on people as you get to know them, and that's true of every team, but you'll like their hustle and the way they work hard and the way they have improved individually to pull the entire team up. Are they good enough to win the national title? No. Can they win a game or maybe two? Sure. Why not in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, it's been a terrific year, and you could look at the record and say, oh, we should have maybe won a game here, a game there against Penn State or somebody, and on the flip side, one of the wins could have become a loss. So, like you said, after 31 games, we are who we are, and it's a pretty darn good record, especially coming from where we were last year, and it makes it exciting going into both the conference tourney and the national tourney, of which a lot of people didn't think we'd make it back this year.
No, there were a lot of people that I was around that were saying, boy, if we can make the NIT, I'd be thrilled. You know, they're thinking that, well, if we can have a winning record, if we can be 16-14 or whatever, they'd take that in a heartbeat. And, you know, and as the season went on, you know, I think there were still people kind of waiting, okay, we've been exposed. Okay, we're here, we've hit the wall. And as it's gone on, this team has bounced back constantly. And sure, there are some games that got away. The Michigan State game got away. The Clemson game got away. You know, the Michigan game up in Ann Arbor got away late. The Penn State game obviously got away. But they also won several close games. They won in Nashville against Vanderbilt. You know, they pulled the two games out in Padre Island that were close. They won that overtime game at Purdue. You know, hit the last shot to beat Northwestern. Pulled away late from Minnesota in a tie game in the last couple of minutes. So, you know, I think in some cases that has been a wash, and they've won their fair share of close games too.
Now that the regular season's over, what has been for you the biggest surprise of the year for this team and the biggest disappointment?
Oh, I would say maybe the biggest disappointment is I was hoping that Legion would be more part of what we're doing. And I think it's unfortunate for him because he came in. It's tough to jump in, as you guys know, in the middle of something. Plus, he had not played a lot of college ball. I think the expectations for him, you know, were maybe way too far off the charts. You know, Bruce kept trying to remind people that he hasn't played a lot, but hopefully he would contribute. And, you know, we saw the game at Purdue. He helped us out. You saw the game at Michigan State where he had double figures, and you're thinking, okay, this is going to make us even more dangerous come tournament time. And then somewhere in there, he lost his confidence as the pressure mounted in the Big Ten race. And Bruce has even said, you know, that he needs to do a better job of letting his reserves play through, you know, tough times. But, you know, you get to a point in the heat of battle where you're trying to win games, and you kind of go with the guys you know, the starters and maybe two or three guys off the bench, and his confidence has waned some. And then just not, you know, he's got to improve defensively, and we all know that, and I think he will over time. But I feel bad for him in a way, because, and that's maybe one of the bigger disappointments, is it just didn't quite work out for him this year. Now, that doesn't say he won't emerge at some point in the tournament, the Big Ten or otherwise, and it hits a few shots and help us win a game or two. But that's probably the one disappointment. Biggest surprise is just how much, and I could see it coming late last year in the practices Bruce was holding. He would hold at the front end of practices, work with the freshmen. At the time, Kami and Davis and Tisdale and Jordan, and how much they've improved, even surprised, maybe even the coaches, how far they've come in the span of a year. And, you know, we were throwing them around. You guys were about the all Big Ten teams, first, second, third, honorable mention, whatever.
Sure.
You know, to have those guys be in that conversation, I think, has been a nice surprise.
Who's your Big Ten player of the year?
My Big Ten player of the year, I'd go either with Battle or Lucas. I know that's probably the easiest, obvious choice, but those two, Battle especially in the last month. I mean, the way he breaks you down, I mean, he's either going to shoot free throws or he's going to make a shot, either a close shot or a rebound. Evan Turner obviously is near the top of the list, but I just think the way Battle is played, maybe it's because I just saw him beat us in a last-second shot. Maybe that's been...
Well, Lucas beat us like a drum, too, down the stretch. I mean, without Lucas, we probably win that game.
Yeah, and if you think about it, you know, we've had trouble with guards like that. Clemson's guards, you know, we're good like that. You know, Manny Harris, you know, is a guy that, you know, beat us. I mean, there's just some different guys that have penetrated on us like that. But I would say I wouldn't think you could go wrong with any of those three, Lucas, Battle, or Turner. But if I had a vote myself, I'd go with Battle.
Do you think Trent's problems are mental at this point rather than physical? I mean, it seems like he puts a lot of pressure on himself in big games, and that pressure alters the way he plays in those games.
Well, I think it was probably more true, and I think you guys are going to talk to him later. You can ask him yourself. Maybe more true when he first came back to Champaign. He always grew up here. He was like me. He was a kid in the seats that wanted to play at Illinois and always dreamed about it. And maybe he did that too hard. I think, you know, mentally, I think he's been fine most of the year. He did have that, like most shooters do, had a stretch where I think he was 4 of 25, and he, once he hit a few couple of shots, he got it rolling the other way. Obviously, the game at Penn State was a struggle for him, and he took some blame himself for that. I don't think it was totally his fault, but obviously, you know, he didn't score and didn't contribute that night as far as that goes. But I don't know. I he's like a lot of kids. I think like Tisdale is, like Davis is. If they hit that first couple of shots, you know, they get very confident. And if they miss a couple, you know, they have to kind of battle through. But he's, you know, he battled through bad ankles last year, bad feet, a bad foot, and, you know, fought his way back this year. And really, I thought, improved his overall game quite a bit. So I would say you might be want something, probably ask him directly and see what he says.
I've got a quiz for you. Of the three returning players, these three returning players, who do you think will have the biggest impact on next year's team? Jeff Jordan, Alex Legion, or Billy Cole?
I would say probably Jordan, just because I think he has really come on and improved vastly from even his freshman to his sophomore year. And I think he can have kind of have the impact. What they're grooming him for is Chester Frazier's job, being a defensive stopper. Whether he can reach that level next year, I doubt. But certainly I think he's headed that direction. So that's just my opinion. But, I mean, offensively, obviously, Legion has more potential. But I think Jordan might have a bigger impact than anybody just because of the way he works his tail off and, you know, it can be a defensive stopper, which we're going to need next year.
You know, I do see some promising things from Billy Cole, though. I really do.
Okay.
And I think he really understands the game, and he's physically, he has some gifts.
Yeah, his problem is he's at a, you know, he's a four. You know, he's kind of in a position where we're deep at that spot, and you got more guys coming at that position. So I hope he can. I mean, and you know, I think he was at the Indiana game. He showed up in the first half. And that was kind of a reward where he had improved in practice, and Bruce even mentioned that. Now, we haven't seen him since, really, in a crucial role, and I think he could develop into that kind of player. I hope he does, because he certainly has spent, you know, a lot of time working hard and developing and just not getting a chance, really, here with so many guys ahead of him at that spot.
Do you see him transferring? Has there been any talk about that?
Oh, I guess, you know, not just speculation more than anything. I don't see that coming necessarily. You know, his dad obviously played here, played football here. I think his ties, family ties to the university are pretty tight. I don't see that right now. I suppose that's always a possibility.
And what have you heard about Stan Simpson and his potential impact on next year's team?
Well, for one thing, it stands out when you watch him in practice is he rebounds so well, which is obviously one thing we'd like to have more of. He's just a little different than some of the other guys. I mean, I think he's lanky. I think he can get stronger, obviously. Physically, he needs to develop.
He's already bigger, though, than Tisdale or Davis. I mean, physically, he's much bigger.
Oh, yeah. And his biggest thing, I think, has been mental, too. Just, he's the only freshman. You know, he's been kind of the guy, you know, when the sophomores all came in, they all had each other, to get through that first year. And, you know, he's not playing. He's just practicing, and does a lot of individual sessions with the coaches, and you know, that's been the toughest thing for him. And then just trying to get all his schoolwork, you know, getting through that freshman year in college. So, I'd be interested to see. I hope that he will make progress like our sophomores did this year, you know, and hopefully he can have that show next spring or next summer.
He kind of reminds me of some of the Michigan State inside players. I think he can be that kind of player for us.
I hope so. Yeah, I think so. And like I said, he's a little different, brings a little something different to the table that maybe the other guys don't do quite as well. And hopefully that'll help.
Brian, as we got a few more minutes here before we let you go, give us your take on the weekend. The matchups are in place. Who do you see getting to the semis and the finals?
Well, yeah, after we say that, it's basically a grab bag once you get past you know, you shake them up in a bag and grab in, reach in there and see what you, see who you pull out.
If there were easy questions, Brian, we'd answer them.
Yeah, I know. My guess is as good as yours, I guess. I don't know. Michigan State obviously has a lot to play for. They could still, get a number one seed, you would think, or at least if they can win at least a couple of games in the tournament, I don't see why they don't. Although I'd be interested to see if Northwestern, and I've been so impressed with the job Carmody's done, Bill Carmody and the players at Northwestern, with what they've accomplished. I wouldn't be shocked to see Northwestern beat Minnesota, and play Michigan State again. Michigan and Iowa, I mean, you got two totally different teams. Michigan three-pointers, Iowa much more deliberate. Michigan, I think, will be coming in off a high with that win at Minnesota, and so I would think they could beat Iowa. Penn State, Indiana, I think both Penn State, Indiana games were really close, and Indiana probably should have won at Penn State. And with the home crowd, so to speak, I wouldn't be shocked if Indiana gave them a real scare, but I'd go with Penn State, to win that game. And, Purdue's psyche is what I'm wondering about right now, because they've gone through, I know there have been some issues on the team just listening to Coach Weber talk about what Coach Painter has gone through. He's had some issues with guys where they were so successful last year, and they've kind of been fighting injuries and sickness and trying to get through things. So I wouldn't be shocked if Penn State were to beat them in the quarterfinals and have an Illinois Penn State rematch in the semis. I'd maybe take Wisconsin over Ohio State, and then maybe Michigan State and eventually Illinois to meet in the final on Sunday. How about that? One versus two.
I like your optimism.
That sounds good. I'll be listening, that's for sure.
Brian, thanks for joining us today on Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G. We always enjoy listening to you, not only on our show, but every time we turn the dial on to 560 in Chicago, WIND, and countless other places along the network. We get to hear Brian Barnhart, the voice of the Fighting Illini. Thank you, Brian.
Hey, it's great to be on with you guys. Great to see you up for football season. Let's go to dinner again sometime.
Love to do it.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Brian.
All right.
We'll talk to you soon, Brian. Thank you.
Be good. We're going to break for a few moments for these words from our sponsors. Again, you can call us at 888-463-6748. Or email us at talkingillini@yahoo.com.
Don't put off the things you should do today. Start a financial plan with AXA Advisors. AXA, financial protection. For more information, call Stephen King, financial consultant, 847-291-3669. That's 847-291-3669. Securities and investment advisory services offered through AXA Advisors, LLC, 212-314-4600. Member FINRA, SIPC.
The award-winning SunTracker Swivel Beach Chair is the only folding beach chair that swivels a complete 360 degrees. So whether you're basking in the sun or just watching the kids, you'll never need to get up to adjust to the optimal position. It's lightweight and folds to only 6 inches wide, so it's perfect for the beach, tailgate parties, sporting events, and more. Anywhere you take a folding chair, you'll want to take the SunTracker. To learn more or to order yours today, visit suntracker.com. Or call 888-786-8725. SunTracker, the ultimate swivel beach chair. A proud sponsor of Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G. Check it out at suntracker.com.
You find the car you want at RizzoCars.com. RizzoCars.com.
It's true. We'll find the car you want at RizzaCars.com. Over 6,000 new and used cars, trucks, and vans available online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's so fast and so easy. RizzaCars.com is your one-stop auto purchase resource site. Build a new vehicle. Compare up to 5 vehicles at once. Access new vehicle reviews. Take a new car video test drive. RizzaCars.com also offers easy-to-qualify online financing, which helps to make your purchase simple and fast. Shop 13 new car franchises, including Ford, Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, Lincoln, Mercury, Acura, Porsche, Kia, Hummer, and Saab. So if you're tired and frustrated of driving from dealer to dealer, just remember,
you find the car you want at RizzoCars.com. RizzoCars.com.
step back in time when going out for dinner meant something really special. Step into Wildfire, a steak and chop house with the aura of a 1940s dinner club. Private and semi-private rooms offer a variety of options for any social or business event. Order from our supper club menu served family style. Try our horseradish crusted filet mignon or Wildfire's delicious cedar plank salmon. Dine at any of our 8 Wildfire restaurant locations. Visit us on the web at wildfirerestaurant.com to find a location nearest you.